Phone with As You Wish Talk Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Extraterrestrial Civilizations and World Peace Conference in the Big Island, Hawaii. We're at the King Kamehameha Kona Beach Hotel, and we have an awesome lineup here. I just want to tell you some of the guests that we have at this conference. We have the keynote speaker is the Honorable Paul Heller, the former Canadian Defense Minister, and we've got Angela Wycliffe looking down the list here. It's quite an impressive lineup. There's John McDonald, Wendell Stevens, Mary Rodwell, who's sitting here right next to me, and we've got Captain Robert Salas, Philip Corso Jr., Neil Freer, Paula Harris, Alfred Wubray, Scott Jones, Joan Ocean, Dr. Thomas Hansen, Daryl Anka, and some great music, too. And what we want to start off this show with is the Reverend Pomakai. I'm saying it right. I'm getting it wrong here, but she's the master of ceremonies to open up the conference, and it's quite an amazing. We had quite an amazing opening. We all got laid, and we had some really nice lays placed over us, and did a nice meditation and opened up. So I'd like to welcome you to the show. Welcome, Reverend.
Mahalo. Well, welcome to Hawaii.
Oh, thank you. Do you have any wonderful blessings for this show and for the people listening to the show?
Oh, eke komo mai. It's so wonderful to have all these people here from all over the world, basically. They're sharing so much wisdom and information with us, and of course we here in the islands have our own little beliefs about ETs, and we have our own special menahuni, which some believe to be from other places other than this planet, and we have a great openness about what is possible here and where we all really come from. So this has been a very exciting, wonderful place. Everybody's been sharing their mana'o, or their wisdom, with us, and all of their pomaika'i, which means blessing, with us, and we're so honored to be able to host this here.
Oh, it's so great to be here. One of the things I noticed was kind of interesting, and I've seen this at many other places where there's some real high spiritual energies, and I was on stage, and the leis weren't even brought out, and you were doing your ceremony, and all of a sudden the whole room filled up with the smell of the flowers, and it was very potent. And so I knew that there was a very strong presence and opening to this event. And, you know, and to me that's one of the indicators. A lot of times when people like Yogananda or some of the other masters appear, they fill the room with gardenias, or each has their special smell, like Mary and Jesus would have roses and things like that. But I mean, the whole audience, the whole room filled up with this smell, and it was very strong. And I just said, boy, this is going to be a great event. This is going to really touch some hearts that come in here. But I want to thank you so much for opening the show for us and bringing in the great Hawaiian spirit and the higher energies, and to help things flow smoothly and peacefully, which is what this is all about, a World Peace Conference. And thank you so much for coming on. We're going to turn the show over here to Mary Rodwell, who is sitting on my right.
Hello, James.
Hello, Mary. This is kind of interesting. We're sitting here having a phone conversation, holding the phone over here, sitting right next to each other. It's a little different. But Mary Rodwell has some great information about the Australian contacts and the children and the gifted children coming in. And I'd like to just turn it over to you and just to speak about whatever you wish to speak about concerning, you know, your focus and as far as the ETs. And
well, the thing that I really want to convey to most people is that really, in terms of the contacts that my clients have had, there's over 1,200 now. I would say most of them, it's been a highly transformative experience. And there's an enormous amount of fear, because a lot of people don't realize that. And a small percentage may initially be really frightened, and often that's more because they don't understand what's going on, rather than the fact that the ETs have been damaging them in some way. And usually when they understand what that experience is about, and explore it, they realize that there's been some very important things happening for them in terms of waking up to the greater reality of who they are and their connection to their extraterrestrial family, which I call our ancestors, because I firmly believe we're all hybrids, so get over it. And it's what's the problem? Because ultimately, you know, we're all part of the cosmos, we're all part of the source, and just because we take on different forms in each environment ultimately doesn't make us any different. And many of my clients have actually experienced lifetimes in different forms, and some of those forms that you might find quite unusual.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I'm trying to do more than anything is help with the fear and help people to understand there's actually a really important happening on the planet right now, and that's what I call an awakening of the species of humanity to a greater reality.
Oh, exactly. It's what I see is again, the conference is about extraterrestrial civilizations and world peace and getting rid of the fear and opening the door to a greater reality. What's interesting, I find it interesting, is how are we going to get along with blue-skinned people if we can't get along with yellow-skinned and red-skinned people and brown-skinned people and black-skinned people on our planet? And, you know, what if they have green skin? You know, what if they have an extra arm or a total different frame and, you know, look different? And, you know, it's amazing when you think about that. There's so much work here to do. I think just thinking about that possibility of greeting these other races that are so diverse and different, I think it does make us reflect back on how we can't even get along with each other on the planet.
I think what will help people is when they become more aware of the greater reality and the fact that they've been many of the species they're actually seeing right now and will see, I think that will help them to realize our connectedness rather than our disconnectedness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what our multidimensional nature will actually show us, as you've understood through your own experiences in those multidimensional realms. I think you're now aware that it really doesn't matter what form. I mean, I've introduced people to their guides, and they've suddenly seen a blue being with a bald head and big eyes and said to me, well, that's my life guide. And I say, well, how do you feel about that? Oh, well, that's cool. So it seems that, you know, it's just about acceptance again, acceptance that we can come in many forms, James.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There's so many things happening right now with these connections. One of the ones that fascinated me the most is one of the people that you were working with, one of the women were doing drawings of these the lion people, or whatever you call them, the felines is what we call them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, very, very common, the lion people, and many of my clients have seen them, have a wonderful feeling about them in terms of their energy, and they also say that they're there almost like spiritual warriors. But what I've tried to show is there are many ways contact happens, and my clients not only draw the beings that they see, but they also create or come out with strange scripts and languages and geometric pictures, which they often say relate back to sacred geometry. So what seems to be happening is a new form of communication that's coming in various creative ways, which I believe is helping us on some level to understand our multidimensional nature.
Mm-hmm. Now, I had an experience myself with a feline, which was very interesting, when I connected with this being, it was an out-of-body experience, and she just ran up to me like we were family and gave me a big hug, and I just felt this total connection like we were long-lost brother and sister or something. There was a female, and I just felt such love coming from this being. And, you know, I totally overlooked the differences that, you know, she did have ears on top of her head and not on the side of her head, and she had a really close fur, very close, like a golden colored fur, and she actually had a tail, and so I had to totally kind of drop some of that, and that's what I've seen over and over again. Some of these beings, there's so much love and compassion from them that if you stay in your heart and stay connected, that you'll overlook the other differences, and some are just beautiful beings on the inside, highly evolved, but on the outside they may look a lot different than we're used to seeing.
It's about not judging the book by its cover. As I say
exactly.
to people that see the different beings, and they'll say, but they look very strange, I'd say to them, what do you feel from them?
Mm-hmm.
And many times they'll say, absolute love, and part of me feels connected to them. And I often think the beings that you see, many of them seem to be family, and what people ultimately resonate to is that feeling of family that they get from them, that they're connected to them in some way.
That's what I felt. I felt very clearly that I had a past life there, that I was connected to these beings, and there was no doubt that there's just an incredible love for myself, and I'm sure for all of humanity, and these beings are just waiting, you know, in the wings. Mm. What I'd like to do, can you hang out here, Mary, for a little while?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And we'll get Wendell, and then we'll come back. I wanted to talk more about some of the other encounters that you've had.
Okay.
Okay, we've got Wendell Stevens on next. And thank you very much, Wendell, for agreeing to come on the show.
How are you, Jim?
We're just snagging people as they go by here, so a lot of people don't even know they're coming on the show until they come walking by. So thank you for the short notice. And I wanted to ask you a few questions. How long have you been in the field of ufology?
60 years.
60 years.
Yeah, since 1947.
Boy, yeah, that's a long time. My father was very aware of this. He came out of Carlsbad, New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and my grandfather actually sold, not Brazil, I can't remember the name, it started with an S, the people that owned the ranch where the
mm-hmm.
Roswell
yeah.
crash was.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Swenson or something like that?
Oh, wait a minute, no. No, I don't remember.
Something like, I mean, it started with an S, I can't remember the name, but they actually sold them the farm equipment, and they knew the sheriff very well. That was one of the first people on the scene.
Yeah.
And my grandmother was telling me about it, that they were just wise as a sheet and really shaken up by this incident.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "These are good old boys. You know, as honest as the day is long, and
yeah.
they don't lie." You know.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure you've looked into that case as well as.
No, I haven't been over there on the Roswell case. Too many
okay.
other people were in it. We spent a lot of time investigating the one. That happened 1 month earlier, the first
mm-hmm.
crash, 7 2/10 miles west of Socorro.
Oh, okay.
The one that the Army, they saw it coming in out of control, and the government notified the Army to get out there and close the highways and
mm-hmm.
cordon off the area. And they successfully recovered it, telling the local population that it was a meteorite that may have dangerous radiation in it. And they
oh,
moved
okay.
the people that lived around the site. Within sight of it, they moved it to motels, and the government paid their stay in the motels mm-hmm. until it affected the recovery, and then took them back home again.
Yeah, they did the same thing in our area, believe it or not, just
yeah.
about 3 or 4 years ago. They
really?
They had a crash on one of the ranches in Snowden, which is just across the way from us.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And they grabbed the farmers, and they put them in hotels, and they had people with M16s out there, and they
mm-hmm.
brought the military in. And helicopters came in, and the next thing, they cleaned it up very fast and bulldozed the whole area. And
mm-hmm.
and they actually went on the town. They had a meeting at the Grange there, and they told people that there's an incident that happened, and they couldn't talk about it. But everybody knew about it. You know,
yeah.
the locals all knew about it. And they cleaned up the mess very quick and disappeared.
You know, in the Aztec crash, when we were investigating that, we discovered something that seemed rather strange. There were a number of eyewitnesses or people that had seen evidence of the crash and had a conscious recollection of it, but all of them were moved away. All of them had taken
mm-hmm.
better jobs out of the area, like in California or up in Colorado or back east, and they moved. They were out of the area at their newer jobs. We couldn't make personal contact with them easily,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder if this is a program, because that's the area where the government went out and condemned the area of a farmer's ranch where the crash took place.
Mm-hmm.
Isolated, put a fence around it, government property, no admittance. And then later, when we went back again, years later, the fence had been removed and it had been returned to the ranch site or the ranch property again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's quite a common occurrence, it seems.
Yeah.
Now, you've got just phenomenal documentation of all kinds of photographs and encounters and probably 60 years of it, I guess.
60 years of collecting, yes.
I bet you have quite a library.
I got 2 bedrooms full.
Yeah. Yeah. You probably have to get a 4-bedroom house, 2 for the...
Yeah, 2 for the collections. And
a couple for you. But, yeah, it's getting extensive. We have the same problem right now. We've got over 60 hours of footage.
Yeah.
And we don't know what to do with it. I don't even know how to catalog it, half of it. But we try to get some of the best things up on the site that we can get. But even that takes technology that we have to get up
bring
to
in,
the,
yeah.
yeah, to bring in to make it happen. The lot of the cases. Can you talk about any of the other cases that? One of them I wanted to talk about was it Hernandez or somebody in Mexico?
Professor Hernandez, yes. We gave him the name Hernandez. That's not his real name. It was a pseudonym because he was a very well-known scientist. He was the head of the Department of Immunology at the University of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
He was a medical doctor. He was a surgeon. He was also the Mexican top specialist in radiation medicine, and he attended world conferences on atomic sciences as Mexico's radiation medicine
mm-hmm.
representative. And when his contacts began, he didn't even tell his wife or his colleagues. And he knew it was happening, but he was afraid of ridicule and trying
mm-hmm.
to tell anybody about it. Until a Mexican journalist, got there doing an interview on something else, and he just happened to mention it, and she honed in on it real quick and got him to talking.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote 16 stenographic notebooks, taken down in shorthand of her discussion with this professor on his relationship with these extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
And then he disappeared right in the middle of that. He was in the habit of taking a walk on the beach in the morning with his dog. He'd go buy a newspaper, walk down the beach with his dog, sit on a bench, read the newspaper, and go home with the dog. And this particular day, he didn't come home and didn't come home, and then the dog came home without
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog was all upset. He couldn't talk, and the wife didn't know what happened to him. He never returned from that. They never found his sandals. They never found any clothes. They never found any body. They never found
mm-hmm.
anything. And the poor dog couldn't talk.
Yeah, but it's too bad you can't go back in time and hook the dog up to some kind of a little little apparatus. It's one or the other. Either just took off with them, or somebody else didn't want him talking about the other.
Yeah,
it could be either way. I believe it was the Andromedans that he said that he was connected with.
They came from Andromeda, yes.
Can you give a description of his description of what they were like? Or?
They were humans just like us.
Mm-hmm.
They could walk the streets in our clothes and never be detected. The woman that came to his class looked like a very common student, good-looking, very well proportioned,
mm-hmm.
and nice, had nice features.
Oh, great.
Probably very regular face. You know, most Earth people have some asymmetry in the face.
Mm-hmm.
People with better genetics have better symmetry.
Yeah.
So she was one of those that had good symmetry in the face and supremely intelligent. She was way ahead of the professor in all of his fields.
Mm-hmm.
He even suggested, as he was lecturing, she'd raise her hand and make suggestions that added to the knowledge that he had already had and included it in his lectures.
Mm-hmm.
And he was impressed by this young woman who seemed to know everything better than he knew it.
Uh-huh.
And the relationship, a speaking relationship, developed. And then, of course, when he came out and found her sitting in his locked car, and he asked her how she got in a locked car. She said, "Those things are easy for us."
Mm-hmm.
And the door was locked when he unlocked it to get in. But she took him to see her ship.
Mm-hmm.
She had him drive her to it, and she got out and invited him aboard. He went in and looked around with her. And then when she told him it was time for her to leave, she let him out.
Mm-hmm.
And she took off in front. Later, she took him for a ride, and then she came back and took him for several rides. She came one time, told him that she had something important to show him.
Mm-hmm.
Picked him up and flew him up off the coast of Alaska. Mm-hmm. And she said, she pointed to a floating target in the water. She says, "Now observe what's going to happen." And there was two jet fighters coming in from Canada at high speed. They came in and made what the military calls an over-the-shoulder pass to
mm-hmm.
drop an atomic weapon. That is to come in at high speed, very high speed, pull up vertically, you release the bomb going up vertically, then pull away from it, roll out, and go into afterburner and get out of there as fast as you can before it explodes to avoid
mm-hmm.
the concussion. So he watched this over-the-shoulder mm-hmm. delivery, and he says, "What's that?" And she said, "That's the customary procedure for delivering that kind of a weapon." And she said, "Watch what happens." And the target, the bomb that went up, turned over and came down almost on target.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "We go to great pains to neutralize these explosions, but we can't catch everything."
Yeah. Now, I understand from most of the people I've talked to and contactees and they say pretty clearly that you know, nuclear war isn't really an option. They're not going to allow that. And also, too, they said forget about the weaponization of space, because everything we put up there is probably going to be coming right back down, you know, real soon. And there seems to be a long history of that, too. I don't know if you're aware of that. A lot of rockets went up and just came right back down again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody added up how many billions of dollars we spent trying to send toys up into space like that.
Oh,
that just went back down. And,
and
if they took that money and put it towards humanitarian means, we'd be...
There would be no homeless people.
Exactly.
We'd provide homes for them all.
Oh, yeah. There wouldn't be any hungry or homeless or anything. It'd be done. And then one of the things I was reading... one of the books on Hernandez, and it, you know, I don't know, did you write that book, or I don't know?
I copied the notes from Zitha Rodriguez and,
oh, okay,
and rephrased them a little bit to make the contact from Mandela.
Yeah,
book.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I remember reading it, and what I thought was fascinating is that they said that some of them don't take on a physical body, and I think some do. They have a choice, according to the notes, or...
You know, I don't remember that part. I know he tried to take a picture of the woman several times, and the picture, when it was developed out, it didn't have a photograph like a person. It was just a white silhouette in the background, and we never could explain how that happened.
Yeah, it's probably a magnetized light body or something like that that's out of our frequency or out of our...
She looked normal to him, but didn't photograph normal.
Oh, great. Yeah, sounds awesome. Is there anything you have to say to the audience before you go? We're going to bring Mary back on. And
gosh, I can't think of anything.
Okay. Hey, can we, before you go, you have a website, right, and where people can contact you?
Yes, I do. UFOphotoarchives.org. UFOphotoarchives.com.
Okay, and if anybody wants to look at some of the evidence or get any of the books or anything, they can
there.
Connect.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Oh, thank you very much for coming on. Hello, Mary. You back with us?
Hello, James.
Yeah, we're trying to grab some more speakers here. We've got a big conference going on. A lot of the speakers are inside right now listening to the conference. So a little later on, hopefully we can snag some people. Oh, hang on just a second. There's a possible that we're going to see if we can track down a couple of other speakers. Having a runner go for us right now to catch, but in the meantime we'll just continue our conversation. Is there anything you have to add to that, Mary,
well, in what area shall I?
Well, I was thinking more on some of these beings as being non-physical but appearing physical to us.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting one. It even starts out with them actually giving a form, I think, that they think that we're more comfortable with, and I'm sure they do that deliberately to start with. Just like, you know, when you've got children that have experiences, often they'll see Santa Claus or clowns or owls, for example, and they're called screen memories for people who are having contact, and it's like they're presenting a form that we're comfortable with so that we won't be so frightened.
Yeah.
But often, you know, the people actually feel, or the individuals feel, they're not what they are, what they're seeing. So they sense on another level they're actually not the clown, not the Santa Claus or anything else. And this really shows their concern for not frightening us, actually, even though on some level we obviously sense that that's not what's actually appearing. So, you know, again, I think that they do their best not to frighten us a lot of the time.
A lot of people are afraid of clowns.
Bottom line is that's what happens. Because they sense it's not, you know, and it's, if you've got a child or, you know, someone who said, I always used to be terrified of clowns, it's quite possible that contact is very relevant to them.
Exactly.
The same as Santa Claus is, you know, the artist that I talk about on one of my DVDs, he was terrified of Santa Claus, and he used to really run away from it at Christmas when he said he was down in Oxford Street seeing all these Santa Clauses, because for him it was, you know, it was related to his experiences. So it was sort of counterproductive, I think, on that one. Not good psychology, ETs.
That one didn't work. I was driving down the road with my brother in Santa Cruz, California one day, and some guy pulled up next to us and he had a clown suit on and he starts honking and waving at me and said my name, you know, and you can't tell who it is, you know, they're
right,
in a clown suit.
That's right.
My brother asked me, he goes, "Who's that? Who's that?" And I go, "I don't know, some clown." I didn't realize how funny it was at the time, but we were laughing pretty hard about it afterwards, you know. And he goes, "Would you know who it was?" And I said, "No, I have no idea whatsoever." So I thought that was kind of interesting. But the going back to the other stories, the that would make a case for why a lot of people have these phobias,
yes,
concerning clowns and owls and things like that of that nature.
Yeah,
they get,
and things like praying mantis because of the praying mantis beings,
mm-hmm,
and also spiders. I've noticed a high percentage of arachnophobia,
yes,
and
uh-huh,
it's due to some that appear like that interdimensionally, and so they're absolutely,
mm-hmm,
terrified of spiders. Because,
yeah,
of it, you know. So there are a lot of phobias, including feeling watched and observed.
Yeah.
And even agoraphobia, believe it or not, because of that feeling of watched and observed, that they don't want to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's, you know, when people are wondering why they have fear, also passageways are another one.
Mm-hmm.
And needles, a phobia of needles is another one, which can often be related back to their ET experiences.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's so many different avenues going there where some kind of trauma might have happened that you get too close to unlocking that with a symbol or whatever, they would go running the other way. But there's so much going on. Can you describe some of the entities that some of the patients that you've been working with or have come up with, like
some
what
the
they look like? Yeah,
yeah,
the different entities.
Well, there's lots of humanoids,
mm-hmm,
that my clients have come across. Some they call the Nordics, or just humanoid,
oh, yeah,
in that sense, you know. There are those that, obviously, there are many, many different kinds of what they used to call,
mm-hmm,
they call the greys. Sometimes they're even beige and multicolored,
oh,
anyway.
Yeah.
So there's the greys, is a multitude of those. And, of course, there are some that they call the reptoids or lizard-like. And,
mm-hmm,
there's many different forms of those as well. There are some that even look a bit robotic-like as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some that, like little sort of flashing neons that they see as sort of flying around that are,
mm-hmm,
quite cheeky. Dwarf-like beings as well,
mm-hmm,
and I think that there's a whole absolute range, including energy beings or light beings, which are very common,
mm-hmm,
and many, I think, more spiritual or religious may see them as angels rather than light beings, depending on their interpretation of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that, you know, really, there are the multitude of forms, from blue-colored right through to beige to gray, in terms of coloring as well. Many forms, tall and short, that the mantis, actually, like the praying mantis being, is generally given a good rap, in the sense that most people feel it's very benevolent and very ancient,
mm-hmm,
and wise, and can be as tall as 18 to 20 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
But many people relate to them and feel quite comfortable with them, even though they're strange, as they say. Some, you know, other insect-like beings as well. So I suppose it's like the creativity of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
There's no holds barred when it comes to how different, you know, what we can incarnate into in terms of when we're a soul.
That's what a biophysicist told me that. It's interesting. What he told me was that every form on Earth can evolve into like a humanoid type form or an extremely advanced species through time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about that, you think of all the diverse life forms here on the planet. Yeah, you could probably have this bipedal cow show up, you know, or,
yeah,
or something of that nature, and be extremely advanced and come down and say, we don't like what you're doing to our ancestors, you know.
Well, yeah,
or,
absolutely.
Or something of that nature. The other thing that I thought fascinating was, I was with this same guy, this biophysicist, and we had a ship appear to us that looked like kind of an elongated pill, you might say, shape.
Mm.
And brilliant light, and we were photographing it, and two orbs came out of this ship, and in one of the orbs, when we blew it up, these light spheres, it looked like a human baby on the,
oh,
inside, and the one right next to it was a larva, and it looked like a baby of one of the, probably the mantis or praying mantis,
mm-hmm,
beings or something. And the telepathic message I received was our children are just as important to us as your children, that,
mm-hmm,
we're in harmony,
yeah,
with the humanoids in space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we work together, we're in harmony. And it really brought a feeling of, you know, making us get beyond, again, the outer appearances of,
yeah,
of what some of these beings are, not judging by the cover, as you say.
That's right. And of course, a lot of people don't realize that they're all working together on the craft, that, you know, a lot of my clients actually will see perhaps a mantis and mm-hmm. see a humanoid and a zeta, you know, one of the little grays or beige mm-hmm. ones, all working together on the craft, having different roles, for example, you know, as well.
It seems like the consciousness that we greet with them, that we greet them with, creates the experience, you might
yeah.
say. If let's say somebody had a very strong victim pattern, they would magnetize this event with a lot of fear and a lot of the other things with the, let's say, the grays that are grabbing genetics so they can continue in their evolutionary process. You know, I don't agree with it. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but maybe there were agreements made on other levels, and people have two ways of looking at that. Either they were tortured and victimized or they help save a race of beings. You know, there's always a different perspective we can take, and our fear taints the experience on what happened. You know, and I'm not trying to undermine some people that might have been abused or bring up those issues, but it just seems over and over again that the consciousness that we extend out is the consciousness that we attract. Yeah.
And that certainly is the case. When I've taken people into hypnosis and we've explored the experience, and then we go to a level where we ask for more understanding of why that mm-hmm. experience was happening and whether or not on any level they've consented, every time I get, yes, it was before birth, and I'm mm-hmm. cooperating because through this interaction we're both gaining. We're both gaining mm-hmm. information or awareness.
Yeah.
And that seems to be very much the theme of certainly the ones that I've actually worked with.
A lot of healing seems to come with some of these things. I've seen where people would incarnate and they'd have defects or have a major illness, and there'd be like a trade-off mm-hmm. between they would be actually healed in the process. And I know one woman I work with was just rolled up in a ball of fear. It was incredible. And we took her back through the experience. And when she re-encountered the experience, she saw two little babies that were hers. Mm-hmm. And was able to hold them and saw what came out of the experience, and
yeah.
and she just started crying, and then she realized the good that came out of it, and then the victim pattern just fell away.
Well, that's very an interesting one. I have one in my book about the missing pregnancies, where a lady called Anne Andrews came all the way to Australia from England because she believed her third child was taken by the evil ETs.
Oh, yeah.
For years, she blamed them for that.
Mm-hmm.
We actually did a regression, and she found, she was told that with this real pregnancy, she was 3 months pregnant, told mm-hmm. by the doctor that if she went ahead, she would likely lose her life
mm-hmm.
because the other pregnancy that she had was very traumatic. So she was already having to look at possible termination.
Mm-hmm.
Overnight, she lost the whole pregnancy. There was no fetus. There was no placenta. And she had flashbacks of this being, you know, the beings taking her child, and she
mm-hmm.
blamed the ETs for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
But when we did the regression, and she saw the experience again, she actually found herself in front of what she called the soldier being, and he was saying to her, you know that if you go on with this pregnancy, that you're unlikely to survive or your child. And he says, we can take it, but it'll have to stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually said that she agreed for them to go ahead because this way it kept her child alive. And she just
mm-hmm.
said, just promise that you'll always love him the way I would have loved him. And she realized that the bottom line was that she'd actually agreed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, she ended up seeing her son on
oh,
the
yeah.
car.
Uh-huh.
So it ended up being a complete reversal of the way she'd seen
mm-hmm.
the ETs. And in fact, she saw them as loving and supportive
mm-hmm.
after that. And it was a complete 180-degree turn.
It seems like an Earth analogy would be like, you know, you're living in a ghetto and you've got no food and high crime rate and everything else, and all of a sudden you have a chance to put your kid in this college and give them an incredible education, know that they're going to be safe and at peace with a highly evolved civilization. It's like a no-brainer. You know, a mother would go, okay, I want to give my kid the best chance possible. And I kind of feel, too, that some of these kids could not function here,
mm-hmm.
if, you know, especially the hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
I've met some people that are hybrids, and you can tell by their skull and,
yeah.
and everything that they,
yeah.
and they just don't get it. They don't understand lying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't
mm-hmm.
understand why people think one thing, say something else, and then feel something totally different.
Yes.
And they just don't function here at all. They don't have the, some of them don't have the, I'm trying to think of the word for it, but just through many incarnations here, they don't have that edge that they've learned how to function within a dysfunctional society, you might say.
Yeah, because they relate more to their ET heritage, a lot of them, you know, what
mm-hmm.
I call it, you know, the dual consciousness, the ones that are aware of their human self but their
yeah.
ET self. In very distinct ways, I'll explain how
mm-hmm.
different each one is in conflict with the other. And for many of them, it's learning how to be human.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, rather than learning, you know, about their ET heritage, because to them, that's the more normal one,
mm-hmm.
which is the reverse of what we would think. And they say, I can't understand how human beings can do this to each other.
Oh, yeah.
And they see us as very, very primitive.
Oh, and what we do to the environment as well, to each other and our environment, and it's just they just can't fathom it. It just makes no sense to them whatsoever.
That's it. And it's usually my job there is to say, well, look, you've chosen to be human as a soul. You've got work to do here, so get over it.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Yeah, get on with it. You came to bring the higher wisdom, the higher knowledge, the higher ideals into this planet, and you know, which brings us into the star seeds and all these just beautiful children that are being born right now. I know you have a lot of information on that, if you could share that with us as well.
Well, I just know that we're actually reaching a quantum leap in human consciousness, and these children being born now have high awareness. They're aware of their past lives. They're aware of their origins. They talk about being on the craft and being taught, like a five-year-old saying, I don't mind going through the walls, and I learn more on the ships than I do at school, and I'll introduce them to you one day, Mum. This
mm-hmm.
is a five-year-old little boy. They're very aware of their origins, and they are also aware of how we have to change the planet, and they exhibit amazing healing abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've been talking to people from all over the globe that are talking about these children that do healing on their parents, like a little three-year-old I heard in Vancouver that mum had scolded herself, and this three-year-old put his hand over the mother's hand, and instantly the blister had gone.
Mm-hmm.
And this was from a biologist that's working with
mm-hmm.
these kids in Vancouver. But I'm hearing this all over the world, James, and
mm-hmm.
it's absolutely mind-blowing what these new kids can do.
I've been hearing a lot of stories. It's just amazing. I met this one kid. What I've seen is that, just to bring a balance to this in a way, I've seen there's a lot of people that are seem like kind of good intentions, but they're telling all these mothers, oh, your kid's an indigo child, or your kid's, and I meet the kid, and I just go, boy, this kid has got a lot to learn. But there are indigo kids out there, and just beautiful beings. That one kid I met, he, you know, this guy's feet hardly touched the ground. He just floated around. He was just a little bliss bomb, and he was so wise, and I was kind of messing with him to see, you know, I was just playing with him consciously and messing with him, and he nailed me like two or three times. He just dropped a real zinger on me and just walked off, and I kind of said something to shake him up a little bit, and he just turned around, smiled at me, and laughed, and just walked away, you know, and just playing around with him to see where he's at, to kind of test him. But, you know, these kids are amazing. My niece, actually, in my presentation, I'm going to show a photograph of my niece, which is one of them. And when we take pictures of her, there's no head. There's just this big gold ball of light. And she came in she's very beautiful, blonde, blue eyes, just beautiful and very strong. And we live in a Baptist community, and she totally took on the church herself, you know, at about age 15, you know, or 16, and then continued, and she turned them around, and they were embarrassed after she got through talking with them. But you know, and she just told them, she says, no, I don't believe the same way you do, but she goes, you got to get out of judgment. I see God in everything and everyone, and just really laid into them, and there was so much force coming out of her, and she was crying at the same time, but she just let them have it, and it totally turned the community around. So these kids, my other nephew did the same thing too, and now they're almost like afraid of us, of our family, because you know, we just sit and listen to them, and then at the right time say the right thing, and it just pulls the rug out from under them, you know. But you know, we just say, you know, our image of God is different, and we think God is love and omnipresent, you know, within everything.
Mm.
And if you know, that being the case, there's no competition, there's no argument.
Mm.
And we just don't, and they don't know what to do with it. You know, they just go, you know, and I said, you can have your image, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, but that works out really well. Is there some other cases that you've worked with children that along that level that seem to be indigo children are very tapped in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the children seem to be have an innate connection to the universe in the sense that many of them talk about talking to the animals, see the fairies, and actually the angelic realm as well, and have this awareness that they've come many times, and they'll say, you know, I've come back a few times and aware of that as well. And also a sense of mission or purpose. They've got something to do, and they're aware of this on some level, and we'll talk about it, you know. And this is another part of it in terms of a lot of them don't actually see solid. They apparently just see energy, everything as energy, and they have to learn what solid is. So that's quite confronting for them to feel, you know, to hear the word solid, because they actually don't know what it is. But as you say, they know when you lie. They they can tell when you're being honest. And I remember this 13-year-old telling me that when she was, sometimes she wasn't too sure what to make of her teacher, because the teacher would say one thing but think another. And she said, sometimes what my teacher was thinking wasn't very nice.
Yeah, exactly.
If the teacher had any idea that one of her pupils could actually read her mind, I think she'd have a real problem with that, to say the least.
Yeah, I know. As a kid, I was very sensitive. I had a lot of very sensitive abilities, and then I lost it because I got caught in some material world and trying to be a success and get acceptance and approval outside of myself. And, you know, I got into that program and all those inner sensitivities just kind of went on hold. And I see that happens a lot with kids. And then I had the near-death experience and it blew me wide open. And the same thing happened to me. I came back and everything was energy. Even trash on the beach, everything was just energy. And I couldn't even, I used to get upset with people that would litter and throw trash on the beach. And then I'd look at it and go, wait a second, that's God stuff too, you know. Everything came from the source, and it totally changed my whole outlook on just about everything. And it took me quite a few years to get grounded again, and I went and lived in the redwood forest for a while just to get my feet back on the ground. And I realized that as a child we knew it all. We had a lot of those abilities, and then it just got kind of, you know, knocked out of us over the years of just dealing with social consciousness and trying to be a success, you know, according to the images that we're given of social consciousness. And and these children now are they've got to be opened up to a whole different reality, and that different reality that they're on needs to be nurtured and supported.
And that's what it's about, because they're born without programs, and that's the difference too. The new models actually have to learn how to work in a third-dimensional world when they're multidimensional, which is, you know, the, completely the reverse for the old model of car, which I call myself, the one that goes up through the gears, whereas they're the automatics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got other people walking by here, but they're still walking, so we're going to try to grab another one. But we'll just keep going and finish out the show. It seems like a lot of the other people are sitting in and finishing out the, I guess, Colonel Corso's son is in there doing a talk, and it's hard to, you know, drag the people out right now. But we're having a fabulous discussion here anyway, so I think... You know, I love your energy and the information you have. It's so aligned with where I'm at, and bringing in, you know, the unity consciousness and opening up to greater realities. We seem to have a lot of different diverse speakers here, and you know, it seems like everybody here is learning a little bit more about, you know, there's so much other political evidence and things going on in the exopolitics and I think coming together, it's we're all seeing different pieces of the puzzle, and that's the main thing. What this conference is about is honoring all the different facets.
The different perspectives I call the ET elephant. You know, we've all got pieces of the elephant.
Exactly.
And we're trying to believe that that's the whole elephant, and of course it's not. And I think the important thing with ufology and exopolitics is that we've got to start honoring each other's perspective rather than looking at what divides us, but actually look what actually unites us, and from that we can work from that baseline.
Yeah, and at the international conference in Laughlin, that was one of the main keys that I talked about. And boy, I got flack for that because I brought it up that how everybody thinks they have the whole pie or the whole puzzle.
Yes.
And they've pigeonholed this UFO phenomenon into one piece, and you have the nuts and bolts, you know, and then you have the abductions, and then you have the cattle mutilators, you know, mutilation group, and then you have the benevolent aspect of it, and then you have all these different aspects, but they seem to be really putting each other down and fighting over what it is, and my premise is it's all of it.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
It's you know, there are back engineered things, there's nuts and bolts, there's ET connections with the government, which they've covered here extensively in the past. We have a past history of back engineering and contact with what I call some more low-level contacts, it seems. But we've had some high-level contacts, too, but we chose the technology, you know, over the spirituality, you might say, mm-hmm. which is, I think, set us back in evolution quite a bit. But, you know, evidently we had to go through that. You know, that
yeah.
was the only way we could get through it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I tell people over and over again, you know, the enigma, the UFO enigma has so many pieces to it, and it's not just this physical reality here. It's interstellar, it's interdimensional, and it's so diverse that, you know, God's universe, you might say, is so diverse, the creation is so diverse that, you know, I couldn't even begin to say I know it all, or this is it. You know, I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, it's why I chose that quote from Einstein about, you know, those that think they, you know, they've got the mandate on truth and knowledge are shipwrecked by the laughter of the gods. And the bottom line is,
yeah.
That's exactly right. And that was the first thing that I realized when I got into ufology,
mm-hmm.
was that, you know, there are a lot of people out there saying, I've got it, you know, this
yeah.
is it, or this is it. And I'm just thinking, hold on a minute, there's this and there's this and there's
yeah.
this and this.
Oh, yeah.
Who's got it, you know? And actually, we've all got parts of it. And if we start listening to each other, then we might just have a chance of seeing what the elephant looks like.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we're going to continue to hold the trunk and think we've got the whole elephant, you know?
Yeah, there'll always be pieces of the elephant missing no
that's
matter what, because
exactly.
it's such a big elephant that with so many
right.
pieces we don't. I always figure, you know, the people are saying this is it and it's all bad or it's all good or it's all hardware or whatever, you know, they're setting themselves up for the universal torpedo, you know, which is going to be wrecking their ship pretty quick.
Well, exactly right. It's an absolute arrogance, and it's
mm-hmm.
an ignorance, too, because we're just, you know, Socrates always said, wisdom is knowing how little you know
exactly.
and how little we know,
mm-hmm.
to be honest. And if we're not open to other perspectives, we're never going to learn. So
oh,
I think
yeah.
it's about growing up and being mature about this rather
mm-hmm.
than fighting like little children and saying, you know, I've got the best piece
yeah.
or the best bit of chocolate, you know.
I love one of the lamas I study with. I love what he said, and I kind of took it over, but he used to always say, I'm nothing, you know, I'm nobody or whatever. And I think this man is just so wise. I mean, this guy used to levitate and appear to people meditating and things like that. And he said, I'm nothing. And I really started thinking about what he was saying. And the more I thought of it, I said, you know, that is so powerful to say, I am nothing. Because out of the nothing comes everything. You know, out of the void became everything. And also in the same case, there's nothing to defend. You know, people can just have their truth, and you just say as you wish, and let them go, and bless them, and move on. And you know, only ego needs defending. And
yeah.
that's one of the most powerful lessons I learned from him is that it's okay for everybody to have their truth or their reality, and to open the door to a greater reality, and say, you know, here's a possibility, but not be in a position where you have to defend it or and even knowing when, you know, when to give this information out is real important as well.
The timing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've told a lot of people there, they go, I've been hammering so hard on my parents to get them to turn around on my
mm-hmm.
family and wake up to this stuff. They go, what can I do to wake them up? And I said, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, what do you mean? And I said, well, you've already told them everything you need to tell them. Now walk away.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing I did. I just said, look, this is what's going on. Everything. I walked away, and then they all followed.
Yeah.
But the more I tried to push my truth or my information on them, it just created more barriers and more arguments and more problems. But I find out that, you know, I know you do the same thing. You're just saying, look, here's information, here's a plate, you know, here's
yeah.
all this fruit on
yeah.
here. Take what you want,
yeah.
you know, and if you don't want it, that's okay.
Well, I often say, you know, that there's going to be 10% of the population that if a UFO landed on their front lawn, they would say it was a fire engine.
Oh, yeah.
Because the bottom line is they do not want to see that UFO. So why waste your time?
You know, maybe they can't see it. They don't want to see it so bad that that their mind just cannot perceive it.
And that may very well be the case, too.
Yeah.
But why waste your energy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've had cases where these UFOs would morph and do all kinds of things, and we had this crew come up from L.A. to film it, and this beautiful light ship just powered up and appeared, flew right over the whole group, and everybody jumped up and goes, "Oh, my God," and they're looking at this big ship coming over. About 15 of us jumped up to see it, and the guy's cameraman standing there looking right at it didn't see a thing. And we were just amazed. And he goes, "You know, I saw all of you jump up at the exact same time. I saw the excitement there and everything." And he said, "Either you did the best pre-planning I've ever seen to fake me out, or there was something there." And he goes, "And I was looking, it was so massive, we could not believe he couldn't see it." But we saw later that, you know, and not to be in judgment, but he was very much into partying and very into just, you know, he just didn't care about any of this stuff. And I've seen them do that over and over again, where they will appear to one person, and there'll be two or three people standing next to them, and they can't see it.
Yeah,
and it's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's also very true. I think that the cameras are actually picking up things that we can't see often.
Oh, exactly.
Craft as well, because they seem to pick up that frequency that sometimes our eyes can't see anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination, maybe.
Yeah, we can see a very small band in the visible light, and there's so many other bands above and below that we can't see.
Yeah.
And you know, if you look at the vibrational continuum, there's all these different. We live in a multidimensional universe. All the physicists know this now, and you look at all the life on this planet, and our universe, what we're in, this little 3D universe.
Mm.
And if you add all that life to all the other universes that are out there and other dimensions and things like that, it's just phenomenal.
Mm.
So we can only perceive such a small bit of the universe that we live in. Even I think the physicists say we can perceive less than 1% of the universe that we live in and what's going on around us.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing. I wanted to hear a little bit more about you wanted to make a comment about the dolphins there? Or? Yeah. We're crossing back over again.
Well, very often I've gone out and taken people out to be in the presence of the dolphins. People say they swim with the dolphins, but that's not true. They swim with us. It's always their choice. They always choose too, but because they are able to read our minds. And I've done a lot of experiments with that to see if that's really true or not. And every single one has been a success. Whether I was in the water with them or on shore, just sending out a thought form is quite amazing. But what really astounds me sometimes is that I'll be in the water with them, and I'll be hearing them, and they're very loud. They're chattering away. Mm-hmm. They're making their wonderful sounds. They're a little and the other people with me can't hear them at all. And I'm going, how come they can't hear them? And probably the most astounding experience I had was one time when I took a woman out who lives here on the island. She's an island lady, and she'd never been swimming in the bay. And she decided finally she would go, and she chose to go with me. And I took her out, and we swam out, and this huge school of dolphins came around us. There must have been at least 60 dolphins in this pod that were completely encircling us. And I was swimming and having such a great time, and I turned around and I looked back at her, and she's looking around like she's not seeing anything at all. And I say, "Joan, you see the dolphins?" She says, "Where?" I said, "Well, they're in front of you, they're next to you, they're behind you." We probably were out there for half an hour swimming with them. The dolphins stayed very close to us.
Mm-hmm.
She never saw them one time.
Wow.
When we returned back to shore, I said, "Well, so tell me what was going on there, because the dolphins were all around us." And she said, "Well, to be truthful, I was in fear."
Hmm.
And so the thing that I love about the dolphins is they always honor and respect people's beliefs. And so if you're in fear of them in any way, they stay away.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't appear. And they don't manifest. They can be there. Sometimes I can see them. Other people can't see them. Sometimes I'm swimming with them and I disappear with them,
mm-hmm.
and other people can't see me,
mm-hmm.
which is really interesting, because you don't know you've changed any shape or form or gone into another dimension until you come back, and then people are startled because they say, "You weren't there. Where were you? You've been gone. We've been looking for you for 20 minutes. Where have you been?" So that's truly an amazing thing, and we're all beginning to do this on the planet, and we are truly evolving here.
Oh yeah, I saw an interesting thing that when the ships come in at the ranch, they come in high, very high first, and they scan the group and look at the mm-hmm. consciousness there, and then they decide how low they come, so because they don't want to create fear, and so they check out. Kind of like a fear indicator. Okay, how much do I appear? Do I really power up? Are they going to hit the dirt? You know, are they going to cheer? What are they going to do? And they monitor that very closely. And I thought about that, and I said, you know, it's as above, so below. In a way, when you're in the water with the dolphins, and they're telling me, you look down, you see these little specks way down there, and they're kind of circling around, and they're monitoring the group and saying, okay, this group, what can they handle? How close can we get? How can we play with them? You know, what's their fear levels? And it's probably the exact same thing, I would imagine, you know, with the dolphins.
There are messengers. Mm-hmm. There are direct messengers right here right now, so wonderful.
Hello, everybody.
Yes.
I just wanted to say, wow, what a show. And the next show is taped, so you can go. You can go for as long as you need to.
Oh, awesome. Great.
Okay. Just thought I'd let you know.
Okay, great.
I love it.
Yeah, we've just been informed we can continue to go here past our time and bring in a little more information here. Some of the other things about the dolphins that what you were saying too is there's a lot of times that I would go into meditation there at the ranch, and I'd come out of meditation to be people showing up to do a sky watch, and there'd be about four or five people standing there, and it's not even dark yet, and I would walk right up to them, and they wouldn't even see me, and I didn't notice any difference. You know, I just felt like everything was normal. And then I'd say hi to them, and I'd be like 2 feet away, and they're looking right at me. And they go, you scared the crap out of me, you know. Where'd you come from? And I didn't really think about it until it happened over and over and over and over again. And I said, you know what, I must be just stepping a little bit out of their frequency so they can't see me. And the more I thought about that, I said, well, if these advanced beings are just out of our frequency, we're probably surrounded by these other beings. And once we move out of our frequency, we can see all these other beings. And then trying to tell somebody what you just saw is they're just going to think you're crazy. You know, they're going to think you're nuts. So that doesn't... what I found for a while there, I used to point at the light spheres and some of the ships and things like that, and other people couldn't see them. So I stopped. I stopped doing it, and I waited till they saw it. And as soon as they saw it, I just said, well, you know... yeah, it's there, you know, grab your camera or whatever. Or I'd tell them where to shoot their camera. I'll point, I'll say, take a picture right there, and they do. And nobody saw it, and then they look at their film, and there's a beautiful light sphere, or there's an orb, or there's beans or whatever. I want to get back to Mary here really quick. It looks like Mary has something to say. She's moving around. Go ahead. Is there something that you wanted to fill in on that? Or?
Well, I'm finding it really interesting now that the cameras are picking up things that we're not able to see. And
mm-hmm.
I have evidence of certainly all these different orbs around where, you know, when speakers are talking about our family out there, you know, what have you. I even had a really interesting one when I was giving a talk presentation in Western Australia. And it's actually what looks like one of the little Zetas right by my laptop, which was only one slide. And what was interesting about that is you can actually see the face and the whole thing that goes with it. And it was just on the one film, the one slide of the DigiFilm. But what was also interesting is the next day we talked to the people in front of that being, as we could see, and they said that they felt the energy between them. There was some strange energy between them, but they couldn't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the cameras are now showing us what our eyes can't see, and the more the cameras, I think, get sophisticated, the more chance we are of seeing those other non-physical realms, which I think is really exciting.
I've heard a lot about these ultraviolet filters and infrared filters and things like that that people are getting now for their cameras, and they're getting phenomenal pictures of things just outside our visible light that we can see, you know, that the cameras are just picking up, you know, incredible things happening all around us that you know, even ancestors and things like that are looking after us, or deceased loved ones or seem to be showing up on these pictures. And we're hoping to bring in some of that technology as well with the we're going to have a live webcam just aimed right at the mountain, so people can just tap in and watch and and, you know, enjoy the show with us real soon. I think it's probably maybe a month away, or maybe could be 2 or 3 weeks away in getting this technology in.
Yeah, well, certainly seeing's believing for a lot of people, isn't it? You know, the bottom line is you're wonderful. I mean, I love your footage, James, where you've got, you know, the pyramid shape craft, for example, I just think are stunning. And it really does help a lot of people to own and honor this once they actually have a chance to see this kind of thing. It is important for us as being third dimensional, on one level at least, to actually see the tangibility of them, which is actually vital.
I think that old saying is, I'll believe it when I see it, but I think it's actually reversed, is you have to create the possibility first so people have the reference points to see it, so they can see it, because they don't have the neural net to see these things. There's no reference points, and so it's just like that experiment they did with cats. They raised these kittens in a room, and one room had vertical bars and the other one had horizontal bars. And when these cats got older, they switched rooms on them, and they just slammed right into the bars. They couldn't see them, because that was not part of the reality. They had no reference points, and when they put them back in, they were, you know, functioned fine. Mm. And it just shows very clearly that our environment, how it creates our reality. We're little perception-driven units down here by how we perceive is the way our reality is created, and we can start opening up to other possibilities, and we get a bigger universe to go with it.
Well, Dr. Lipton, of course, talked about that, didn't he, in Montreal when we were there?
Oh, yeah.
And he, you know, he said exactly that our reality is created through, not through the actual DNA molecule, but actually the cell itself actually is programmed by our perception of reality and our programming that tells us what's real rather than anything else. And that sort of says it all.
Oh, yeah, exactly. We definitely are products of our environment, and I think our... And he also proved, too, is that the input, there's an unseen intelligence, because there's not enough genes within the physical body to operate it, that they're missing about 70,000 genes to actually make the body function. So there is some unseen intelligence that's operating outside the body just to keep us afloat and keep us going. And now they're moving into soul and spirit realm, but they can't name that, because then they're stepping out of biology. But that's where all biology and all science isn't going to end up anyway. Because everything comes from one point and goes back to the other. We're running out of time now. We're a few minutes over, but again, I want to thank everybody for coming on the show. Thank you so much, Mary.
You're welcome.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to end with a Hawaiian aloha here.
James and all you listeners, ke akua aloha pume oi. May the God of love always be with you. Aloha a hui ho e malama pono.
Thank you so much for that wonderful blessing. And this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.